Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Ready to feel more reassured about your future? Start or top up your pension today. Visit zurich.ie to learn more.
Now, as we heard in the news bulletin, former Kilkenny hurler DJ Kerry has been told he faces an inevitable prison sentence for defrauding people by falsely claiming he needed money for cancer treatment. Kerry, who the court was told is of no fixed abode, pleaded guilty in July to 10 counts of dishonestly inducing people to pay him money for cancer treatment. A number of further counts are being taken into consideration by the court. There for us was RTE Primetime's Paul Murphy, who will have a special broadcast of Primetime on Monday night at 9:35 on RTE One Television on DJ Kerry. Good evening to you, Paul. You were in court today. You have been reporting on this story since it unfolded. Just bring us through, if you may, the full background to the story and how it all came to trial.
OK, just to correct you first, the programme was on Tuesday at 9:35.
Thank you for
Monday.
That clarification.
So the background to it is obviously DJ Kerry was he was telling people he had a sickness that he didn't, and he was looking for money from them. His barrister today placed it in the context of serious money troubles that he was suffering at the time. He also said that there was difficulties with relationships that he had. But really, I mean, if you look back at DJ Kerry, who was obviously a tremendously talented hurler, nine-time All-Star, he won 5 All-Irelands. He retired from inter-county hurling in 2006. And at that time, he was running his cleaning supplies company. It wasn't a particularly successful company. It had lost money, actually, from 2004. But it had gotten into sort of deeper trouble. The accounts for to March 2009 talk about over 160,000 in unauthorised spending at the company. We got to see an auditor's report which referred to it, and there was email correspondence as well between an accountant and director up until March 2009, who we can't name because she's before the courts on other charges, but it referred to unauthorised credit card spending by the company. There was €80,000 in personal credit card spending on her credit cards that was paid for by company funds, and this was indicative, I suppose, of just how the company was run. There wasn't even DJ Kerry himself admitted his eye was off the ball. And on top of that, he had a huge property debt to AIB Bank, and they secured a judgment against him in 2011, which is the same year that his company went into liquidation. AIB secured a judgment for €9.5 million. At that stage, DJ was in deep financial trouble. Now, he did, in 2017, he did get a big write-off on the guts of that debt, as in repaying about 3 million of the 9.5 million, there was about 6.5 million left, just slightly less than 6.5 million, and he got that written down to €60,000, so basically 1% of the residual debt. And it turned out, as we heard in court today, that 60,000 was actually paid for by Dennis O'Brien, who was one of his biggest supporters and turned out one of his biggest victims.
Yeah, so he was among 22 people who were defrauded out of almost a total of almost €400,000, Paul. Only €45,000 of which has been paid back. Now, he did enter a guilty plea, which meant that he avoided a trial, and he pleaded guilty to defrauding 13 people over a 9-year period. It spanned 2014 to late 2022, didn't it? But in court today, we heard from some of those who were defrauded. Give us a little bit more detail on what we heard on their story and how it all played out for them.
Yeah, so there were two victim impact statements that were, one of them was read out in court by one of the victims, a man called Thomas Butler, who had been an accountant. One of the things that stood out for me was not just the scale of the hurt that he felt because of this deception, but also he mentioned about how he didn't have, you know, large sums of money to give to his kids at different times when he would have wanted to. But it just happened that when DJ Kerry asked him for money, he had received a retirement lump sum, and of course he wasn't giving DJ Kerry the money, he was lending it to him, and then he wasn't able to get the money back. And so there was a lot of, I mean, it was a very, you could see the the distress that it caused to that man. And then another victim impact statement wasn't read personally by the victim, but it was Dennis O'Brien, and it was read on behalf of Dennis O'Brien by a lawyer and for the prosecution. And the statement referred to it said it was unconscionable what DJ Carey had done. It talked about cunning, and he said that he had helped lots of people in the past, but he had never been defrauded. And he said he felt embarrassed by how he was essentially DJ Carey made him seem like a fool. And in fact, the judge was anxious to say at the end, in his summing up, the judge is going to do sentencing on Monday, having heard all of the arguments and statements and whatnot today. The judge was anxious to say that the people who gave money to DJ Carey were extremely generous, and they were wholesomely charitable, if you like, and they shouldn't feel in any way foolish or anything like that.
But also, they were approached by someone who said they needed money for cancer treatment. They had their story. DJ Carey spoke of his difficulties, but this was non-existent cancer treatment. What different methods would DJ Carey use to get that money from his victims?
Yeah, so there was a sameness to the initial contact. Typically, we heard a bit of this in court, and then we've heard it through our own journalistic inquiries, which was typically people got a text message, and the text message would be, DJ Carey here, can you please give me a call? So very polite and very soft. And these text messages went to a variety of people. Sometimes they went to people who he didn't even know, but everybody would have known him obviously by repute. And then they went to other, sometimes to acquaintances and sometimes to friends. And they typically a phone call would follow, and then DJ would then describe what it was he had and that he needed money. Now, he told some people that he needed money for treatment. He told some people that he didn't need money for treatment, but he was getting it free because he had a world championship in handball, and because of that he was considered an elite athlete, and because of that he was able to get free treatment in America. Now, of course, that's a highly unlikely story to start with, but that's what he told people. So he told them that he needed money for transport and for accommodation whilst in the States, and that actually was a common theme.
Do we know the illness that DJ Carey is said to have told people that he had? Like I mentioned, cancer there, but did he go into specifics?
Yeah, he did sometimes, yeah. So he told people that he had an illness called multiple myeloma, which is a blood cancer. It's about 1-2% of all cancers I understand are multiple myeloma. It's about 15% of all blood cancers. It's a relatively rare type of cancer, obviously, and so it's not really that one that people would know about, although one of his victims, as it happened, had herself been diagnosed with multiple myeloma. So he had heard about the diagnosis, we heard in court today, and he approached her for money, herself and her husband, and they gave €4,000, which for this under this false pretense.
I think what's shocked people is not that this could happen, that people can't be found guilty of deception and defrauding others. We know that happens every day. It's the fact that it's such a high profile sporting figure, a legend of the game of hurling, and people trying to understand why DJ Carey chose to do this.
Yeah, that's a question that we will never really know the answer to, because he did have lots of options. I mean, we for our program on Tuesday, we did a lot of documentation that we unearthed, and part of it is we have partial financial records, and they show, for example, that he was hired by Off the Ball, the News Talk's Off the Ball, and he was paid nearly €2,500 per month for that, even though he made very limited appearances. Now, of course, News Talk was owned at the time by Dennis O'Brien. He was also an ambassador for Topaz, and there was one payment, for example, of $24,000 was made in July 2008 from Colleen E, which is an advertising agency. So he did have options when it came to promotional events, because he was such an important and a famous and talented sports figure. He was in demand for all sorts of events, golfing events, advertising, commentary, all that sort of thing. So it's a little mystifying as to why he felt, because obviously he had hugely overwhelming debt, but once he had come to a debt settlement with AIB, which was in 2017, that debt was written off for the payment of 60,000. So it that doesn't explain the deception that went on into 2020, 21, 22, etc.
And we know, Paul, that he told victims he was about to receive a compensation award of over 1.5 million as a result of a medical negligence claim as a way of telling people, you know, they would get this money back. I guess just as you have been covering this story for years now, Paul, how do you reflect on it today after what was heard in court, a huge body of evidence and what the victims have had to say about that, what they went through? And looking back on it and of all the work you've done on it, what's your overriding reflection?
Well, the sense you, and there's a lot of memes and a lot of, you know, DJ Carey has done, you know, he's defrauded people. He's also suffered a humiliation because you have all of these memes on social media. But there is a sense that you on social media that almost it's a bit of a laughing matter. And there's also the sense sometimes that it was a very simple fraud. It actually was simple in one way. Invent a sickness, tell people you need money for treatment. It's entire fiction, it's entire bogus. But there was also layers of lies. There was false documents. There was a false, for this fake court case. It wasn't quite as simple and uncalculated as it might appear to some people. So it was, in many ways, it was not a simple fraud. It was quite a complex one.
So you were in court today. Can you tell us a little more about DJ Carey's demeanour?
He was impassive. He didn't speak in court. He wasn't asked to speak. He stared mainly straight ahead. He was sitting in the space that's reserved for defendants. He was staring straight ahead. He was looking intensely at his barrister at different times, and his own barrister was pleading, giving his mitigation pleas. And then he looked at the judge as well when the judge was speaking. But he really didn't smile, didn't cry, didn't laugh, didn't frown. When I saw him, he was very, very impassive, implacable.
And just on the context of all this, to remind people, like, it really is no exaggeration to say that he was the hurler, a sports star of a generation, one of the greatest Irish sports people of all time.
Yeah, he was. He was. And he was also, super unusually in a county like Kilkenny, where hurling is, you know, at such a high level, it's taken so seriously and is essentially the only game really of importance in Kilkenny. He was playing senior hurling for Kilkenny when he was a schoolboy, and that was such a tribute to his talent. He stayed with it, right? He retired temporarily in 1998, but he stayed with it through the years. And even though he was part of the most successful Kilkenny team towards the end of his playing days, but he didn't win as many All-Irelands as other Kilkenny hurlers, but he still won five and he won nine All-Star. So that is just an amazing body of work. And of course, that is also what made his fraud possible.
And yet DJ Carey remanded in custody over the weekend, awaiting sentencing now on Monday. And the judge saying there is an inevitability here. There will be jail time for the hurler.
Yeah, and there's a 5-year sentence for each count that he pleaded guilty, potential 5-year sentence. So in mitigation, his barrister today was arguing that he had, you know, he'd been helpful with police, he'd made early admissions, and he also pleaded guilty. So therefore, meaning there was no need for a trial, although the guilty plea was late. But what the barrister was saying was that he was arguing against, because there is the potential for consecutive sentences. Mm-hmm. He was arguing that they shouldn't be consecutive, that they should be concurrent. So that was really his main plea of mitigation. But even his own barrister was accepting that jail time was an inevitability before the judge, in his own final words today, also said that it was inevitable.
Okay, well, a special primetime programme about DJ Carey from Paul Murphy and producer-director Sally-Anne Godson is set to be broadcast on Tuesday. That's the 4th of November at 9:35 on RTE1. It'll also, of course, be available on the RTE player. Thank you to Primetime's Paul Murphy for joining me this evening in studio. Thank you. Thank you.